Now it's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight here on KPFT Houston.
The other day, a comedy lover friend of mine was talking about the Three Stooges, proclaiming those three brothers were the best. Well, I corrected him. They weren't brothers. Moe Curley and Chimp Howard were bros, but Larry Fine was no relation. His reply? It doesn't matter. Well, he's a good guy, but he was less interested in acknowledging the truth and more addicted to quick, simple answers. You know, sometimes appearance and spin seem to influence public opinion more than facts. Now, don't get me wrong. Some fabrication can be good. Tall tales, for example, teach our children about the power of the metaphor, similes, and other figures of speech. And although truth, as we know, will set us free, it won't be dominating this morning's edition of Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal, because we're going to see to it that you can't handle the truth. Good morning. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication studies at the University of Houston downtown. And today, we're going to lie like bandits because it's time to celebrate the Houston Storyteller Guild's annual Liars Contest. It's our 25th on April 13th. More about that later, but right now, let me proudly introduce to you a champion liar, Sheila Starks Phillips. And I do mean champion liar. She's a three-time winner of the Houston Liars Contest, and earlier this month won top fibber at the Texas Storytelling Festival. Sheila's been a frequent guest on Storytime, and for good reason. She has an uncanny way of weaving tales laced with wit and wisdom to audiences of all ages, and often draws on her own use of music to make her stories extraordinary. She's performed at festivals across the country and has been featured in the Exchange Place program at the National Storytelling Festival, and is a past recipient of the prestigious John Henry Falk Award. A renowned children's author, her first book, The Extraordinary Surprise, published in 2001, is a testament to Sheila's commitment to teaching moral and ethical problem solving. Her career experiences range from first grade teacher to Houston zookeeper, which is why she's slapped affectionately with the label Zoo Lady, and contributed greatly to the interactive and colorful approach of her telling style. So, mirror, mirror on the wall, Sheila, are you the teller of the tallest tale of all? Good
well,
morning, and welcome,
morning.
Welcome, welcome.
Good morning.
So what in the world makes you such a great liar?
Well, I think I come from a long family of liars trying to outdo each other's stories.
Never told the truth the moment you were born.
That's exactly the right.
All right. Wonderful. Well, we want to hear your lie. We know you've got a longer lie. It's a wonderful story about turkey and vultures and all sorts of interesting things that happen in Amarillo, right?
That's exactly right.
All right. Let's hear it.
Well, you know, Texas has a long tradition of festivals. At any given time of the year, you can find a festival to celebrate something somewhere in the state. There's garlic festivals and onion festivals and strawberry festivals. There's rose festival, arts festivals, renaissance festivals, storytelling festivals all over the state. We are a state that loves a good festival. Now, I grew up in Amarillo, and Amarillo was always at the forefront as a festival giver, and you'll understand why when I remind you that tourism is the biggest industry in Amarillo, and so the city fathers were constantly on the lookout for ways to entertain the hundreds of thousands of tourists that flocked to Amarillo every year. Well, they would come in the summertime for the shrimp festival because nowhere else on earth will you find sweeter tasting shrimp than those that come out of the Gulf of Amarillo. And the big highlight of the winter season was the Prairie Dog Iditarod, where teams of prairie dogs would pull little sleds from the courthouse steps in Amarillo all the way to Happy Texas, a distance of 120 miles, mostly through the mountains. It would take them about 90 days to get there, and sad to say, not all of the teams made it. It was just too dangerous, too treacherous. And then there's that big 4th of July Hunter Hog Armadillo Stew Cook-Off Festival that brought in tourists from every state in the Union and foreign countries as well. We loved a good festival up in Amarillo. Now, when I was a kid growing up, we had a mayor named Ralph Dallas. He was a good man and a very capable mayor, but the real driving force behind the mayor's office was his wife, Della Dallas. Now, Della and Ralph had one daughter. Her name was Dolly. She was a pretty little thing in the face, but just a tad on the chunky side, if you know what I mean. Now, Della decided that Amarillo should have one more festival. And she tried to think of something that happened on a regular basis that she could build a festival around. And then she remembered that every year, on the first Saturday of May, the turkey vultures would return to Paladura Canyon, which is right on the outskirts of Amarillo and certainly a tourist attraction in its own right. So Della decided that Amarillo needed to have a turkey vulture festival. Well, Mayor Ralph thought it was a grand idea, and so she made a presentation to the city council. They gave her the needed funds and their blessing, and she set right to work. She began to form committees for food, for decorations, for publicity. That year, Texas Highway Magazine and Texas Monthly did a multi-page spread in their April issues publicizing the upcoming Turkey Vulture Festival. It was the most publicity we'd ever had. Now, there were all kinds of things going on. They had a queen's contest because you're not much of a festival if you don't have a queen. It had the usual categories of swimsuit and evening gown and talent, and I have to tell you that Dolly Baby captured the queen's crown. It was not so much how she looked in her swimsuit, if you know what I mean, but her talent absolutely knocked people out of their socks, because she tap danced to the Colonel Bogey March, remember, from the bridge on the River Kwai? She tap danced to the Colonel Bogey March while twirling a fire baton. She was such a talent. Now, they had events to get the younger elementary school-age kids involved in the festivities. They had a poetry contest and a poster contest. And as a matter of fact, a little old boy in my fifth grade class won the poetry contest. And I can remember it like it happened yesterday. They had the event down in the high school auditorium, which to us kids, well, we would not have been more impressed had it been Carnegie Hall. It was this huge, mammoth, cavernous place. When I got there that night with my family, the place was packed, standing room only. When it was my friend's turn to go up, he walked up there like he did this every day in the world. Timmy Stewart was his name. He looked good. He had on a brand new pair of blue jeans with that crease right down the middle of the legs. He had a white starched shirt, a little bow tie, and his hair all slicked back with Brill Cream. He looked good. Now, here's his poem. I still remember how it went. Oh, turkey vulture with head so bald, see-through nostrils, and that's not all. Cleaning up both dale and hill, scarfing down the latest roadkill. Oh, nature's garbage men, we salute you. Without you, Lord knows what we'd do. We'd be up to our eyeballs and carcasses dead, doing our best to clear our heads with a terrible odor that accompanies such things. You've saved us from that. You truly are a king. Well, by the time he got through, people had jumped from their seats. They were pounding their boots on the floor, cheering and hollering. And I guess you know, he won first place. He got a solid gold trophy and a $25 war bond. Now, the festival was being kicked off with a giant parade right down Polk Street, which is the main street in Amarillo. People had come from everywhere. They were lined up four and five deep on both sides of the road. They kicked it off with a Amarillo Sandy marching band. They looked great in their uniforms with the drum major and the twirlers, and you had the cheerleaders and their pom-poms. Behind them was the drill team doing some really fancy precision marching. Then behind them you had all the Girl Scout and Boy Scout troops from the entire town marching smartly, and behind them were all the Little Leaguers in their brand new shirts from the new season. They had on bright yellow, greens, purples, and blue shirts that said Cardinals, Blue Jays, and Robins across their chest, and behind them were all the floats, because every civic club in town had produced a float. There was one from the Lions, the Kiwanis, the Optimists, but the most fascinating, fantastic float of all was the Queen's float, because the entire float, including Dolly Baby's gown, was made entirely of turkey vulture feathers. It had taken months to collect enough. Behind them were the Will Rogers Range Riders on their horses, followed close behind by the street sweeper, which is how every parade in Amarillo has always ended and does to this very day. And that's when they went down into the canyon. And now I'm going to pause for just a moment and give you the ending in just a moment.
Oh, the drama. I can't stand it, the drama. You know, you really believe it when you tell the story, don't you? I mean, you really believe it.
Well, it was true.
It was true. Yeah, I think psychotics say that, too. That's really fascinating. All right, you're listening to Mirror, Mirror on the Wall, Who's the Teller of the Tallest Tale of All? On KPFT's Storytime with storyteller Sheila Starks Phillips and me, your host, Hank Rubichek, Brill Cream, a little dabble, do you? Let's go ahead and continue that story.
Okay.
As soon as
the parade was over, everybody went down into the canyon. It's only 17 miles from the center of downtown Amarillo. They parked Dolly Baby's float in the bottom of the canyon, and they surrounded her with an ROTC honor guard from the high school. And those young men had their bayonets in their rifles, and they stood at attention all day long while Dolly Baby signed autographs and gave her Queen's wave. Now, they had a little petting zoo set up over on one side, and some of those little carnival rides for the tiny children to play in. And then people brought their entire families and big old baskets of lunch, and they'd spread out blankets on the ground. It was this festive family affair. Now, up on the rim of the canyon, vendors had set up their booths, and they were selling all the things you would have at a festival, like tacos and cotton candy and T-shirts and armadillo legs and all the things you would have. Now, the plan was the birds were due to arrive in the canyon at 5:30. That's when they arrived every first Saturday of May. It's like clockwork, like the swallows returning to Capistrano. At that point, when they came down in, the band would begin playing the Turkey Vulture March, which had been written especially for the occasion by the high school band director. The cheerleaders had developed a new cheer that went, "Give me a V, give me a U, give me an L," and it went on from there. And then the drill team would release 20,000 balloons in the shape of a turkey vulture's head. At that point, the mayor of the town would wave his Stetson at the fire chief, who would put a match to the fireworks show, and that would be the grand finale. And what a finale it promised to be. Well, everything was set. There was a hush over the whole crowd. They sent a lookout up Amarillo's tree, and he was to signal back with a mirror. You could have heard a pin drop. The vendors stopped hawking the wares. The band quit playing. The drill team quit drilling. The cheerleaders quit cheering. It was a hush over everything. The signal was received. We looked out over the horizon. There were easily 50,000 turkey vultures coming in and coming in low. Della gave the signal to the children. She had walked among them earlier after lining them up down the road and handed each child a raw piece of chicken. Some of them had a leg, some of them had a wing, some of them had a gizzard or a heart or a neck. When she gave the signal, they all raised their raw chicken into the air. When that lead bird dipped down to take that raw piece of chicken out of Della's hand, in his excitement, or perhaps it was his hunger, that's something we'll never, ever know. Instead of grabbing the chicken, he grabbed her by the wrist and pulled her right up off the ground. She was just a little wisp of a thing, and he was able to carry her for about 10 feet, finding children, half of whom were crying and screaming in terror. That first child hit the next, who hit the next, who hit the next, who hit the next. A long line of children all the way down into the canyon, falling like a line of dominoes. 250 kids, lying in the dirt, screaming and crying in terror and holding raw pieces of chicken. When that last child was hit, he rolled about 15 feet and crashed into one of the ROTC honor guard that was standing at attention guarding Dolly Baby's float. When he hit that young man holding that bayonet on his rifle, he fell forward and the tip of his bayonet hit Dolly Baby in her ample rear end, and she screamed and threw out her arms, knocking the lit cigar out of the mouth of the police chief who was driving her float. That lit cigar went up in the air, and it rolled over and over and over and came down right in the middle of the fireworks. Well, talk about your rocket's red glare. The whole thing went up at once. You had Big Bertha bombs. You had sparklers. You had Roman candles. You had Amarillo tornado blasters. What a show, what a show, what a show. The turkey vultures, meanwhile, were so put off by this chain of events that they pulled up in their flight and they flew all the way to Lubbock. And they have never returned to Amarillo or Palladura Canyon. And that's exactly the way I remember it happened.
Wow. All right, Sheila. You know, you must have gotten everything you wanted as a child, right? I mean, it's just unbelievable. Is that an award-winning lie?
An award-winning lie.
Unbelievable. We are lying with guest Sheila Starks Phillips and me, your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek. And that's the truth. That really is my name. On Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal, 90.1 Houston. The Liars Contest is going to be held at Houston Baptist University's Hinton Center, Dillon 2 Auditorium, 7502 Fondren. Now, the directions are on our website, www.HoustonStorytellers.org. It's $8 for members, $10 for non-members, and I guess $9 if you don't remember anything. I don't know. You're going to hear the best liars around and laugh more than the law allows. Sheila, let's just talk about lies. All right?
Okay.
Let's talk about it. Now, I know that you do, you've done workshops on how to lie. And could you give us a little bit of a teaser, some recommendations, some ideas about how to create a whopper?
I can. I think the key is you have to have your audience wondering what part is true and what is not.
Oh.
I find that the one I just told about the Turkey Vulture Festival, if you're not familiar with the geography of Texas, you're going to miss a lot of the humor in that story. So you have to know your audience. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much a regional story. I don't think it would go well in Maine because they wouldn't have any idea what we were talking about.
And they can't pronounce words with the letter R in it, so
it would be
very difficult.
I hadn't thought about that.
I don't know if you noticed that the dictionaries in bookstores in Maine and much through the Northeast Corridor are thinner because they don't use the letter R. You know, it's pakeka. You know that. You knew
I
that.
I did not
Now, how
know
many
that.
People did I just insult? A whole bunch, I'll bet. That's okay. It's Friday. Okay.
You'll be getting some phone calls.
Yeah, I'm sure I will.
So you take an element of truth. I have a whole series of Amarillo stories because Amarillo, being what it is, lends itself to stretching the truth.
What is it exactly? I know it has no trees, but you have a great story about
the only tree in Amarillo.
The only tree, and of course, the only tree in Amarillo is
in my front yard.
Front yard, right? And it was a tourist trap. It was people
people came from everywhere to see it. Exactly.
Yeah. It was an apple tree, cherry tree.
Oh, it was a live oak.
It was a live oak tree in Amarillo.
Planted by my daddy with one mere acorn.
Wow. So the real key to telling a lie is that we need to keep our audience guessing what's true and what isn't.
Exactly. Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
How do we start? How do we start?
Well, I try to think of events that might have happened in Amarillo, like they did have the Olympics there one year, and because of the ski runs were so very,
the
very
ski
good.
Runs.
They're so very good in Amarillo.
Yeah, it's very hilly.
Uh-huh.
Very hilly, mountainous.
Exactly, and of course the Gulf of Amarillo is there, and I have one about the Nazi submarine being out there, because we thought there were Nazi spies in Amarillo.
Yeah, I always thought that. I think that was in some history book.
We were looking for them all the time. Mm-hmm, we were out looking for them.
Yeah. I remember reading that book when I was applying for my kickball scholarship to college. I think I was reading something about the Nazi submarine in Amarillo. Yeah.
And did you get that scholarship?
No, I really worked hard. The only place where they had a kickball scholarship was Yale. And I didn't get in, but I really worked very hard. I tried hard.
I see. Well, that was disappointing, but I'm glad you rose above it.
Yeah, I did. So Amarillo is, in your case, it's kind of an anchor behind a story.
It is.
So how would you suggest people just get started? They want to tell a lie. They want to have fun. Let's say they want to be in a liar's contest one day. And I know you do workshops, and some of the advice that you're providing is wonderful. Is there anything else in terms of how they can actually get started? Just what do they do? Okay, I want to tell a lie. I have my pen. I have my paper. How do I begin?
Well, you begin by just sitting down and starting writing. Don't punctuate. Don't do anything. Just start writing. And think of an event you want to expand upon. and I think of everything you can possibly associate with that event, true or untrue, and just keep going. And then you write and write and write, and then you go back and you cut and cut and cut. And just use your imagination. Just go wild.
Just brainstorm. Worry about connecting the dots later.
Later, okay? Absolutely.
All right. And I want to play with this just a little bit more in just a moment. But you are enjoying story time. You have to be enjoying story time. On KPFT 90.1 Houston with teller Sheila Starks Phillips and me, Hank Rubicek. Now, Sheila and I will tell you, the Houston Storytellers Guild swap on the third Tuesday of every month at 7 o'clock at St. Andrew's House next to the church at 18th and Heights Boulevard is a great way to learn and embrace the magic of storytelling while hanging out with really the best people in the world. So check out our site at, again, www.HoustonStorytellers.org for meetings, events, and just all sorts of wonderful things, including make sure that you get that exact location and all the dirt on the Liars contest on April 13th. Print it out, write it out, because if you're like me, you gave Custer his directions, there's a good chance you'll get lost. So get there, and you'll be absolutely fine. Sheila, tell us your website, and tell us if you have anything coming up in the near future.
Let's see. Nothing that's public. I have...
Do private things, or what does that mean? Does that mean...
That means I'm going to be at organizations that have luncheons and that type of thing. There'll be some summer library reading programs that I do around the area. The first one coming up, I think, is actually in Livingston. So you just need to watch. Libraries are wonderful about bringing in storytellers to their summer reading programs.
And just to shift gears for just a moment, just to shift tone, you used to be a teacher, and I know that you're a wonderful teacher, and that teaching something through stories is a very important goal of yours. Tell us a little bit about what stories really can do as far as enhancing the learning process. What do we learn from stories?
Well, you learn history. You learn everything. It's rather than just giving dry facts to children, students in the classroom, to connect it with the story, to tell the story that goes with it, they will remember it that way, way more than if you just start throwing facts at them.
Right, far more memorable. Absolutely.
And my teaching career was very short-lived because we were moving around at that time. Mm-hmm. Best job I ever had in my whole life was as a zookeeper at the Houston Zoo. That was my love.
And tell us the obvious question. Tell us, I know you're called Zoo Lady, and I want you to tell us about your site and some of your availabilities and the things that you do, but give us a real quick history about Zoo Lady and why you're called Zoo Lady.
Well, I first set up the email when I was still working at the zoo, and it just seemed like the thing to do, and nobody else had it at that point.
No, I would imagine nobody else has it at this point.
Well,
absolutely.
They better not.
Yeah.
But you did
something with kids, with tours. I mean, when the kids would come around, you would really do something.
I did. I was a docent for 15 years at the zoo, then I was on staff as an actual zookeeper and worked in primates and started out in an animal hospital. And then when I quit doing those two things, I taught classes at the Houston Zoo.
Can you give us just a real quick example of, like a 20, 30-second example of what you would do as a docent that would mesmerize the kids so much?
Oh, well, what mesmerized the kids was the live animals we'd bring out. And you can always keep their attention if you've got live animals. If anybody started to misbehave, all you had to do was say, you know, I'm not going to be able to bring these animals out because you're scaring them, because you're too loud. They would get quiet very quickly. But you could, it's amazing how many children don't know the difference between a mammal and a bird and a reptile. We take that for granted. Mm-hmm. So we were teaching all the time and using story as we taught.
Yeah, wonderful. That is so wonderful. Well, Liar Liar Pants definitely on fire at the Houston's Liars Contest. Again, that is April 13th at 7 o'clock at HBU. And again, one more time, please go to www.HoustonStorytellers.org for all the specifics. Additionally, starting the first week of June, I'd like to share with you that the years of monthly story time that you've enjoyed will join the superlative weekly lineup at KPFT programming on Mondays at 6 a.m. So get up. Stories, call-ins, and a world of fun, and I'm more excited than a witch in a broom factory, I got to tell you. Right?
And I do want to mention my website. You keep asking me about it, and
please.
I keep not mentioning it.
I know you have to make something up, right? Is that why?
No, I really have one.
You have a real one.
It's www.sheilaphillips.com. Pretty easy.
Pretty easy. And you do performances at schools,
centers. I do a lot of adult audiences, too.
Wonderful. Yeah. Sheila, thank you so much for your amazing fibrications, recommendations on developing the art of fostering the fabulous fables of falsehood. I'm Dr. Hank Rubicek, wishing all of you a magical weekend and reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique source on the Houston airwaves. We rely on listener donations. Visit kpft.org to support this station. KPFT listener members are welcome to produce an Open Journal. Prospective producers must fill out an Open Journal request form, which is available at our website with details. The program director welcomes your feedback on every Open Journal. Listener feedback helps KPFT determine what Open Journals are appreciated by the community at large. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 308.